This is PFW in progress.
Hello, fellas. Everybody's here. Freddy, Tom, good to see you.
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
I do you a favor and take Freddy in when you're having a bad time, and then you try to push me out. I gotta kick asses sometimes to make it run right. We had a little argument, Freddy and I, so I had to straighten him out. He was banging cocktail waitresses two at a time.
Paul Perillo.
Come over here, kid. Learn something. You start out with a little bit of oil. Then you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, some tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Just cut the crap. I got more important things for you to do. How's Paulie?
Oh, Paulie. Won't see him no more.
And Andy. And Andy?
I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart. And I want the stakes.
Andy Hart.
I know it was you. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
Some guy named Tom.
Tom's no longer consigliere. Gonna be our lawyer in Vegas. That's no reflection on Tom, but that's the way I want it.
Mike, why am I out?
You're not a wartime consigliere, Tom. Things may get rough with the move we're trying.
Maybe I could help.
You're out, Tom.
PFW in progress.
Just when I thought I was out.
All right, speaking of a couple dorks, it's Fred Kirsch and Tom Casale here with PFW in progress. And we'll be here until 2 o'clock today, Tom. So, you ready for it?
I'm all ready.
I tell you, Patriots Nation, man, it's a nation divided, and a nation divided cannot stand. So we're going to have to work on that today. It's Wednesday. That's right.
Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. So that means the players are back. Yesterday was their day off. They're back. We're in full swing. It's media day. Bill Belichick had his press conference today. Of course, he officially announced the signing of Vinny Testaverde. Of course, we're going to talk at length about that.
A very old-looking Vinny Testaverde.
Very old-looking Vinny Testaverde. We're going to talk a lot about that. We're going to talk about the new field at Gillette Stadium. They're putting in field turf. I just walked by. I mean, there's like mountains of rubber.
Yeah.
Mountains of rubber that, you know, people that you've seen the field turf, it's the artificial grass with the rubber in it. So they're getting that done. I'm amazed at how fast they can do this.
Yeah. You know, you would think it'd take longer, but.
Yeah. So that's happening. Players are back. Tom Brady just had his press conference. Both he and Brady and Belichick. You can get that in archive on Patriots.com. Let's see. Donald Driver's calling in, so you'll be able to hear that.
Doesn't Brett Favre play for them?
Yeah, a guy named Brett Favre.
Is this one of those things where Brett Favre? I just get the impression that Brett Favre is kind of like, I'm Brett Favre and I do what I want to do now. Because wouldn't you think normally he would be the conference call? And I'm not blaming the Patriots on this. I think it's actually
right.
Brett Favre who's
right.
being the jerk here. I bet you he says, you know, I don't really need to do that stuff anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it could be.
I get that aura from him, you know, that it's kind of, I'm Brett Favre and you're not.
Well, I think that's the case there in Green Bay. I mean, the guy's got a contract for life. And, you know, Brett Favre, great career. Obviously, he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
I mean, but let's be honest. If you're the New England media, despite the fact that Donald Driver's having a good year,
right,
you want
to talk
to
Favre.
Brett Favre.
Yeah. So, you know, but I think that Green Bay will never get a chance to rebuild until he decides he wants to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the similar situation that Miami was with Marino. There was a time where they had to move on, and Marino didn't want to quit.
Well, and someone on the NFL Network, I forgot who it was, brought up a good point. If they're trying to get this guy to play for two or three more years, what does that say about Aaron Rodgers?
I know.
Because if they wanted to get Rodgers in, they'd be saying, all right, Brett, why don't you move it on out? You
right.
know, but they're trying to get this guy to stay.
Right. Well, it also could be a ruse for a trade. You know, if the Green Bay thinks that he's good for another two, 3 years, that ups his value in the trade market. Maybe they could trade him for a second round. I don't know.
Who?
Green Bay.
Trade who?
Brett Favre.
Can't trade him.
He's got a no-trade clause.
He's too old. Teams won't trade.
I'm just saying, you put it out there that we think he can play another two,
yeah,
3 years.
Yeah, I guess you wouldn't get anything for guys that old. Huh? I think pretty much, Fred, we can see his play.
The Patriots just signed a 43-year-old quarterback.
They didn't trade for him.
No.
I mean, we can see Favre's play declining. I'm pretty sure the GMs in the National Football League see it, too.
Well, he's actually played pretty well lately.
No, I know. But I'm just saying he's not worth a second-round draft pick.
I don't think he is.
But I saw, you know, I was waiting for Vinny because I'm doing the story, in PFW. And you know, you wouldn't tell the difference between him and a coach. He's got gray hair. Obviously, he's in great
physical. Yeah, you would. He's older.
He's in great physical condition. Obviously, he's one of those workout warriors who keeps his body in great shape. But interesting, number 14.
He's going to be number 14.
Steve Grogan.
Well, that number is not retired.
Right. But
and
I thought it'd be 14, but Andy said no because of Grogan. Then when he said it, I kind of said, yeah, you're right. Maybe they won't.
What number did Testaverde wear? Wasn't he 12?
16.
Oh, 16. Why did
Castle.
Castle's got 16. Okay.
And I don't know if you know 12's taken, too.
12 is taken, yeah. I knew that, but okay, so...
But
so he's
Bill
number 14.
It,
you know, I don't think it's a, you know, even though I know Grogan's number is retired, I think it's a sign of respect that a guy like Testaverde is wearing Grogan's number.
Yeah, I don't think Grogan would. I mean, I'll ask him next week, but I'm pretty
sure. He was
going to
have a shirt for his age, but Colvin's plan.
And as Bill said.
Gary with the big shot there.
As Bill said in his press conference, he told Vinny when he signed him, I hope you never have to play.
Yeah. No, it's true. So do we.
Yeah.
You know, because if he's playing, we're in trouble. But I have some opinions on why they signed him. I know there's a lot of speculation, everything from Brady's hurt to Castle's not good
I don't think that's the case.
You know, to, you know, just, hey, it's now they just decided they've been skating on thin ice a little bit.
All right, well, can I give you my logical explanation first, and you can chime in with yours?
Are you insinuating that mine's not logical?
Well, this is what I think.
All right.
I think Tom Brady has a minor shoulder problem. I think that's pretty well documented. It's some kind of tendonitis or something in his shoulder. I think it might have flared up a little bit after that Jets game after he took that final hit. I don't think he's injured to the point where he's going to miss game time. I think he might have a bit of a shoulder problem, and they said, you know what, Garrett Mills can't help us this year. Why don't we go ahead and bring in Testaverde on the, you know, remote chance that Brady does get hurt down the line? Then we have a backup who's been here a few weeks, gotten in the system, a quality veteran who can back up Matt Castle. That's what I think it is.
I think, do you think that Matt Castle popping up on the injury report against Indy has anything to do with it?
No, I think that was a joke. I think Bill is directly, I think he's telling the truth when he says Matt Castle will play if Tom Brady gets injured.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it's a combination of things. I think you're right on the money with what you're saying. I think, you know, they did feel like they were skating on thin ice. I think he might have a little bit of tendonitis, not just in the shoulder, but perhaps in the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that wrapped up before. Second thing is, I think that, you know, and here's where you're going to say I'm illogical.
Yeah.
The Patriots have one of the smallest coaching staffs in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I think that Bill Belichick, I think he does more on a daily basis than any other head coach in the NFL in terms of where he has his fingers in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a quarterback's coach. Josh McDaniels is technically it,
right.
But he's the offensive coordinator. I think you solve exactly what you say by bringing in Testaverde. I also think that you bring in a veteran quarterback that kind of Brady can work with. I also think you bring in a guy that Belichick trusts, you know, and, you know, Belichick's been through a lot lately. It's, you know, and no, he's human.
That's not necessarily illogical. The only part I said when you said upstairs is you said he brought him in to be Brady's friend. That I think is stupid. How do you know they even like each other? As far as the experience to where maybe he can help him and stuff.
I never said the word friend.
I thought that's what you said.
Mm-mm.
I'll have to ask Paul.
But he is a guy that he can bounce things off. You want to call him a sounding board, maybe. I mean, you know, Testaverde's been a lot of good things and a lot of bad things in his career, but one thing he's always had is pretty good technique. And he is a lot like Brady in his technique. So I think he's a good sounding board, but I also think he's a good sounding board for Bill Belichick. I think Bill Belichick needs a friend.
Maybe.
I think he needs someone to talk to. He's known this guy for a long time. And I think that there's a lot of off-field things that he's human.
I thought Bill Belichick didn't have any friends.
Well, no, I think he does, but I think they're very few and far between because he's just that kind of guy. He's like Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells doesn't have a lot of extended friends, but the guys that he have are very, very close to.
Then why wait till November?
Because I think what you're saying was the final straw.
The Brady thing.
Yeah, but I think by bringing in Testaverde, it's all those things. You know, there's other quarterbacks out there that aren't 43.
Now, obviously, you know, it's Vinny Testaverde. He's been in the league a while, so we're talking about it. But as Bill said in his press conference, and let's be honest, this will all die down in a week because we'll probably never see him.
Right.
Well, he'll just be standing. He's going to be the emergency third-string quarterback every week. Bill's already said that officially. So, you know, while he's bringing him in and everything, it's kind of something to talk about. Most likely, it'll never generate anything.
I agree with that. But I think behind the scenes, he can be a big help to this team.
Well, now, is he going to block anybody?
No.
Because that's a problem.
Well, we're going to get to that. So who was the guy that Bill slapped? First question of the press conference.
You're got to be Andy, right?
Oh, no. Our buddy. Bert Breer got B-slapped.
What was his question?
If he was going to compete with Castle
for the
backup,
number two?
Which is a terrible question, by the way. And Castle has cemented himself. If they were worried about Castle, moves like this would have been done months ago. So Belichick just said, did I say that?
Right.
He said, how many times are we going to ask the same question? We don't need to ask this six times. And he just, I mean, it was as bad since I've been here that anybody's gotten it from Belichick.
Okay.
As Paul said, it was almost like a Parcells moment.
Well, that's pretty cool. No, I don't think he's here. We know he's not here to compete with Matt Castle for the number two spot.
Let me tell you something. If you're bringing in a 43-year-old guy who looks 53, to compete for the backup spot in November, then this team's got way more problems than we ever thought it did. Let's be honest, because that's not going to happen. It's not the Bears when Kyle Orton was the starter and they had Chad Hutchinson as the backup. You know what I mean? This team's pretty well set everywhere. They're not bringing in Testaverde to get on the field and play.
All right, webradio@patriots.com is the email address, webradio@patriots.com. We already have, about a dozen emails in, but we'll get to all of them. We're here until 2 o'clock. If you want to chime in on that subject, Vinny Testaverde. If you want to, Tom kind of alluded to some of the blocking problems that they have, whether it's offensive line or halfbacks picking up blitzes, tight ends. You want to talk about that because that was clearly a problem.
For 2 years. It's been a problem for 2 years. And, you know, I thought there was a good question asked at the press conference. You know, how do you offset that? Because Brady, I can't believe the guy survived last season. And after that Jets game, I said, this guy is tough. I mean, they don't come any tougher than him. He got up. He was killed in that game on a lot of hits. And I'm sorry. I just don't see every quarterback in the league getting hit like that every single week. This line or whatever, the protection, whatever they're doing, it's not working. And they need to fix that soon. Or I got news for you. You might see Testaverde.
Yeah. Now, do you think that this is something that teams have picked up on and have kind of circulated around the league?
Yep.
You know, that they found a chink in the armor there?
I tell you where I think it started was last year, the first game in Denver. They were sending blitzes from different spots, and Brady took about as big a whooping as I can remember. He did the same thing in Kansas City, Miami. These teams all kind of found, and it's this year, too, it's coming back. The Bills, you know, the Jets this week. Listen, the Jets haven't touched a quarterback all year. They had 12 sacks coming in. Three were by Kerry Rhodes, which means their defensive front had combined for 9 sacks. That's awful. That means they don't touch a quarterback. And they were putting pressure on Brady on every play.
On a slow field.
On a slow field, right. That hurts pass rush.
You know, so, I mean, I can't argue with it there. Now, what's the solution? Do you have to keep a back in all the time, sort of as your bodyguard? Or how do you work on that? Because if these guys are, you know, if they're sending more than you can block, guys are going to come free.
You want my
opinion? That tells me two things. The quarterback has to recognize it, and he's got to either audible at the line or do something at the snap. Or you got to keep in extra protection, max protect.
That's my opinion. Enough with the 4-5 wides. You know what? The five receivers you got on the field, they ain't any good anyway. How about this? Max protect, let two receivers go out, give Brady time, and then he'll find them. Because
if they get open.
Well, you know what? You just have to trust that because the five guys they got aren't getting open anyway.
Yeah.
My point is it's not like you're spreading this out when you got five good wide receivers. You got garbage anyway. So I'd max protect, give Brady time, allow him to find the guys going out because right now he's got no time. So if you try that and it doesn't work, then you just need to get new receivers.
Well, there you go. Hey, Gary, at the press conference right now, Jonathan Kraft is talking about the new field. Why don't we go to that?
Come to the settling part in a second.
We're going to complete the base work probably by Saturday afternoon, maybe Saturday night, and we'll begin sewing the field up on Sunday or Sunday afternoon. And then once the field is sewn up, then the infilling process begins, and that'll take 2-3 days. And we're going to have to roll the field. Normally there's a break-in period where we like some weather and we like some play on the field for about a month until it reaches optimum playing level, because I don't know if I should explain. Field turf is, I'll segue off of that just for a sec so you understand. Field turf is like every one of you. Some of you are much younger than I am, so maybe not every one of you, but most of you have had parents or grandparents that had a shag carpet. Remember those old white wool shag carpets? That's the kind of machine that makes field turf. So it's a big, long, tufted fiber. It's a little bit more than 2.5 inches in, well, actually 5 inches. It goes down and back up and then gets cut off. So you got 2.5 inches of fiber. And what we do is we infill the 2.5 inches. So it's the reverse of grass, where grass gets cut down to 3/4 of an inch in height normally. We go upwards 2.25 inches, or 1 3/4 inches, I gotta do the math. 1 3/4 inches of infill going up. And that's done by putting in layers of silica sand and cryogenic rubber. And we just keep layering it, and then on top we put all rubber on top. When it's all, there's about 10 pounds of infill that's packed in there by the time we get it all done. When it's done, it's soft. It's like soft sod, and it's not a fast playing surface that you'd want to play on. So what we're going to do is roll the field, and artificially, for after 2 days after we get the field in, we're going to pack it in and get it to a firm, fast surface. I mean, the same surface is at the RCA Dome in Indianapolis, and I don't know if you watched or are aware of the times, but the times were actually quicker on field turf than that other stuff. I never talk about that other stuff.
When you look at it, when you're doing it this quick, is there some risk involved in just maybe the quality of the surface? Is there any downshot to, or what would be the downshot to doing it this quick?
Heavy snow.
So you risk that if it does snow, it's going to screw everything
up. Well, it's going to make it difficult. We're prepared. We've put in 11 fields in Scotland where we've had to work under a movable tent and literally sew it and move it and infill it and keep going and keep the heaters going in the tent. We're even prepared for that. But that, you know, worst case scenario.
Is the long-term viability of the surface put at risk at all by doing it this quick?
We wouldn't be putting in a field at this facility and for these people if we didn't think we can put it in the best that we could.
Is there another comparable situation where you've done it in mid-season and you've had to work this quickly?
No. Normally the fields get put in during the summer up until August or September when school starts and the schools come back to work or pro teams come back to work or after the season.
Doc John, about doing this prior to the season, actually doing it in July or whatever?
No. We've, as Jonathan said, we're in touch on a fairly regular kind of social basis after doing the fields up here and over in Tel Aviv, but we didn't talk specifically about getting this field done this year, except a month ago, as you're all aware.
What is the life expectancy of the surface where you'd have to replace it or change it in a way? What do you have to do with it?
Depending on usage, it'll last 10, 12 years easily. Nothing's going to happen to it, and you know the ozone layer isn't too bad up here.
Any statistics regarding injury versus natural grass at your surface? Any numbers?
Yeah, when we got into this business, the main player, or actually the only player that controlled this artificial turf industry, was AstroTurf. You know, there I said the word. I got like a, you know, chalkboard scratching on it. Well, we buried them on February 13th, 2004. That was a happy day. Right at the beginning, back, if you go back a while, you'll remember that there were always reports coming out that AstroTurf was no worse than natural grass. That was the standard line everybody tried to put on the street. Some of us who have played the game and go to alumni meetings and everything else, and you walk around, you see guys barely able to walk. You knew damn well that wasn't true, but that was the standard line. So from day one when we got going, we began in a quirky way. It just happened by coincidence. We had a doctor, Bill Barnhill, who was the he's the orthopedic surgeon that put Peekaboo Street back together again when she crashed. And he wanted to do a study on injuries, and he began a study 7 years ago. It got published in the Journal of Sports Medicine 2 years ago, and it showed that there were actually fewer injuries on field turf compared to natural grass. But very, very close. It was way, way less than on, against AstroTurf. You're going to get all the similar hand injuries, you know, keeping a defensive end off you and putting your hand out there like I used to do. You're going to get all the normal shoulders and clavicles and ribs and everything else. You happen on everything, and the guys are running faster today than they used to. But on lower extremity injuries, you have a less serious incident of injuries, and you have a lower amount of injuries than on natural grass. Now you might ask, how come? If the field is kept and maintained in absolutely perfect condition, then you've got an absolutely perfect field out there, and you've got an awful lot of grass fields that have an awful lot of divots and uneven fields, and that's why you have a higher incidence of some lower extremity injuries on natural grass fields.
What was the first field, and how have you guys improved on the surface since then?
We put in two fields, and well, when we got started, like I said, this other company basically had an illegal monopoly on the industry, and we only were able to sell privately owned facilities at the time. And in 96, 97, we were able to break through and sold some public facilities. There were two fields. One was out in Portland, Oregon. The other one was in a little bit north of Pittsburgh. It was Joe Montana's alma mater,
All right, let's get back to the emails and football talk.
You don't want to hear a sit down with Albert Breer?
Well, that just so in case people do want to hear that entire thing, you're going to play the entire press conference during John Rook's show, Gary. So if you are interested in the history of AstroTurf and Sport Turf, Field Turf, you can hear the whole press conference in the 2 o'clock show. So. But we thought we got a lot of people emailing. We figured we'd get back to that. Now, Gary, you have that whole exchange with Bill Belichick and the writer queued up. There you go. All right. So that's the full exchange, and that was quickly put to rest.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. It's webradio@patriots.com. We just heard the president of Field Turf. What's his name?
I don't know.
Sid Gilman?
Yeah.
Is that his name? I don't know. It could be. Anyway, he was introduced by Jonathan Kraft, and they're talking about I thought it was interesting. Usually 5 to 6 weeks to put in one of these surfaces. They're going to do it in less than two, working three shifts, 24 hours a day. So only the Patriots can get a company to do
that. I'm a little concerned.
Why?
Because he said that they have to, like, put stuff on it first and all this.
To roll it?
Yeah. No, like how.
You're concerned about heavy snow?
Well, yeah, I'm concerned about heavy snow, like Burt Breer. No, the way to get it ready, like through weather. Remember he said they kind of want to play on it for a little bit before they unveil it. I mean, this is professional football. You know, these are top-notch athletes, and they're kind of cramming it in. So it'll be interesting to see if at first people are slipping or if it's not quite ready.
Well, maybe. You never know. We'll see. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of scrutiny. People will be looking at it. You know, you're going to see some of the writers out there, you know, putting their foot down and testing it as if, you know, that's going to make any difference. Yeah. So big happenings here at Gillette Stadium. New backup quarterback, number 3 quarterback, new field, Very, very interesting. Patriots on their way to Green Bay to play Sunday. I think it's going to be a little tougher game than we thought at the beginning of the season. Green Bay's playing a little better. They do have offensive weapons, and the Patriots' defense, as we were talking about earlier, had a lot of trouble against the Jets, keeping them off the field, third down conversion. On the other side of the ball, offense is having their trouble with pass protection, and Tom had just given his answer to that with the whole max protect thing, and instead of spreading them out, just keeping two, more of a pro set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to try to simplify it a little bit, because what they're doing is just not working. Teams are, I think what you said, are catching up to what they've been doing, and they don't really have the quality of players at the receiver position to make them pay like they have in the past. So maybe just simplify it a little bit. Keep some guys in, because if you give Brady time, he's going to find somebody.
Right.
I think the main problem with the passing attack right now is he doesn't have enough time.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Jason in Scotland. Let's get to the emails. webradio@patriots.com. Jason from Scotland says the Pats aren't playing the best. I think most would agree, but the best thing we can all do is get behind them and show them no matter what, the fans will stand by them. I hear that. These guys here, they're already off the bandwagon.
No, we tell it like it is, Fred. If there's something wrong, we have to say it. That's our job.
Especially,
if you want other people to just say what you say, they need to hire a new crew.
Especially Brady. He's the main man and has brought a Super Bowl success. He knows what he's doing. But then again, maybe bringing new and exciting ideas in from other coaches might be good. Get the players excited. Oh, and it just went away. Get the players excited about the playbook and what they're going to do on the field. So that's Jason from Scotland. I think we do need to stand behind them.
Who's not standing behind them?
Well, I a little bit more trust in what they're capable of. I mean, you guys upstairs earlier were saying if they lose to Green Bay, it's over.
I said
it's done.
I said it's time to panic a little bit. That's what I said. I didn't say it was over.
Well, you guys said it's a must win. If they don't win, it's going downhill.
No,
it's going to be over.
Fred, let me explain something to you. When you have coaches like Coughlin, Belichick, Parcells, now this is documented history. If things start going bad, the players can turn on them.
That's true.
Now, what I'm saying is you've already had two losses, right? The first one, okay, they lost to the Colts. You had a couple of things come out. Maybe we should have stuck with the running game a little bit. Second loss comes, you have more players come out saying, we were outplayed, we were outcoached. Now you're going on a road against a team that's in the NFC. They're 4-5. You should beat them. You should beat this team, okay? If you lose to that team, I'm afraid the locker room, things are going to start happening in there. You're going to get guys popping off a little bit, things that we haven't seen around here. That's the danger I think you face. Not that, the team's no good, but it's not always the best teams that win divisions. You know that.
Well, I think that the Patriots have the veteran leadership in the locker room to avoid that.
Those were the guys that were talking.
Well,
it was Troy Brown, Mike Vrabel, and Richard Seymour.
Yeah, I don't think Richard Seymour was saying we have no trust in our coach anymore.
He didn't say that, no.
No. What did he say?
No, he said we got outcoached. But
the same thing that Belichick says after every loss.
That's not the same thing, though, Fred, and you know it. You know it.
You know.
Let me ask you something. Who did the Patriots play? Who did the Patriots play?
Eric Mangini.
Right. And Richard Seymour said they got outcoached by Eric Mangini. How do you think that sits with Belichick?
I think if anything, that's going to help them. It's going to bring them together.
Maybe it will.
And I think that Bill Belichick would be the first one to say, you're right, Richard.
My favorite was
you're right.
Mixing
privately.
Salad.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants people going out to the media and saying, you know what?
That's all right.
The pupil, you know.
Richard Seymour is allowed to say it. You know,
now, I think you just close your eyes to things.
Richard Seymour is allowed to say that. He's earned that right. Now, has Ellis Hobbs? No. But Richard Seymour can go out and say that. And I think that the captains talk to Belichick on a regular basis. I think this is
so
a
what?
Good thing. I think that, if anything, this is going to make this team that much
isn't
more
this
determined.
Isn't this the same Richard Seymour who criticized when they let Branch go?
That's okay.
So Richard Seymour can say whatever he wants about the coaching and everything else.
What I think
that doesn't happen.
What I think
here
he said about
it.
Deion Branch,
plus,
I don't think was that
plus,
bad.
Richard Seymour hasn't made a play in 6 weeks. So
well,
there's another.
That's
problem.
A different issue. That's a different issue. He's got his own cell phone for fans now. You hear that?
Yeah.
Have you called?
No, I haven't called yet.
Yeah, I called. I talked to him.
I'm going to call and ask when he's going to make a play in the backfield.
Ken Flanges has his own fan line. He's never at his desk though. John in Palm Bay's on the phone. John, how you doing?
Mancini, it's just that they're in the same conference, and he's not very civil to him because, you know, it feels like he abandoned them when he needed them the most, because he has a good relationship with the guy, the head coach in Miami, and it took a couple of years for him to get over the initial strife that they had.
Right. Okay.
And my other comment is, what was the story with Seymour? Was he hurt, or was he just not playing?
That's a good question. We don't know. I mean,
according to Bill Belichick, they do that every week.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I know that they did go in with the idea of rotation because one of the things, Seymour wasn't playing in his normal position. Jarvis Green was. Seymour was playing on the opposite side. It was a muddy field. He knew guys were going to get tired. Plus, there was a perception that Seymour didn't play a lot in that second half because Belichick said, we're not going to rotate these guys within drives. We're rotating them series by series. One of the series that Seymour was sitting out was that nine-minute drive.
Yeah.
You know, so, but again, I think, though, that when you see that you're in a dogfight, you got to get your best defensive player out there.
There's no question.
There's no question about that. And, you know, even if you think that Seymour hasn't been playing well up to then, which could be the case, I look at him and I say, okay, Richard, we know this is the time where a guy like you steps up. So, you combine that with how he treated Doug Gabriel after that fumble, and I think Belichick himself, this goes back to my opening monologue, I think Belichick himself is under a lot of personal pressure that he's taken it out on his players.
This goes back to my point. If they lose in Green Bay, things will continue to get worse.
I think they're going to talk about it this week. I think this is going to be okay.
So it's between winning and losing. You can talk all you want. They lose.
I understand.
More people are going to start complaining.
Absolutely. And winning solves everything.
Yes.
Losing makes everything worse. I understand. I have faith in this coach. I have faith in this team to work this out.
You don't think it's a must-win this week. Say that.
Thanks, John, for calling.
Thanks, John. Say they lose to Green Bay, right? They're 6-4 with the Bears coming in. Now, is that a must-win?
Depends on how they played in Green Bay, against Green Bay.
So they can just, according to Fred Kirsch, ladies and gentlemen, the Patriots can lose 10 straight games and there's never a must win.
No, if they lose to Green Bay, then I would say Chicago at home, that's a must win. Now I'll say that's a must win.
Yeah, because if you lose your fourth game at home and your fourth game in a row, things are really good on.
That's it. If they lose to Green Bay, go 6-6, forget about it. We can start our draft shows.
All right.
All right? I'll give you that.
Okay.
All right. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Next one is from RJ in Las Vegas. He says, I didn't mean to make it sound like I think we should be running laterally all the time in my email yesterday. My point was that Maroney doesn't seem to be able to get any holes from the O-line, and I wonder what would happen if he had some open space once in a while. After all, compared to the rest of the NFL, he's second only to Justin Miller of the Jets and kickoff returns, according to NFL.com. What do you think? Aside from changing the players on our offensive line, what other alternatives does Belichick have in utilizing him better?
I think he just needs to touch the ball more, like we said on the TV show last night. He needs more touches.
Yeah.
He has to get them.
I agree. And, you know, I mean, I've heard the argument against that, you know, again, they're rotating the guys. You know, what are you going to, you know, I think Paul in his Ask PFW yesterday kind of broke it down, you know, the different plays and that the fact that the Patriots really didn't abandon the run until they were 11 points down or something, you know, in the Colts game. I just think that, you know, just like the Colts managed to get the ball in Edgerrin James's hand despite having Marvin Harrison and Brandon Stokley and Reggie Wayne and Peyton Manning, the Patriots need to do the same with Maroney, and it's not the same putting it in Curtis Martin's hand. It's a different player altogether. You know what you're going to get with Martin.
You mean Dylan?
Curtis Martin.
They know where you were going with that.
Yeah, I mean, with, you know, that just shut my mind. I'm having trouble with all of this. This is wearing on me. No, with Corey Dillon. Maroney's a completely different running back. You put the ball in his hands, and there's a chance that he could break it for a long game. Mm-hmm. I mean, that 50-yard run that Dillon had was a touchdown with Maroney.
Oh, no one would even come close to catching him.
You know? So you ask the question, what right now, and I love Corey Dillon.
And okay. I think in this,
and
in
I love Corey Dillon.
In the previous game, he should have gotten more carries, I thought, in that one game. But in general, I think it should be Maroney.
I mean, what can Corey Dillon do for you right now that Lawrence Maroney can't? Okay, weigh the things that each of you can do, and you're going to come out on the plus side with Maroney right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can throw it to him out of the backfield. You know, do a max protect. If there's nothing there, dump it off to him.
And I have a problem when people say, well, Maroney only had 39 yards on 11 carries. I've seen Emmitt Smith go 14 carries for 28 yards and finish with 170.
Exactly.
You got to give the guy more carries. That's the problem.
And, you know, again, this could be just a stupid fan talking, but didn't it seem like when they ran Maroney, it was right up the middle?
That's all they ever run.
Give him a chance to go wide. You know, give him a chance to do a little downhill running. Let him pick his hole.
And we had this conversation after the Denver game when people were saying, you know, well, Maroney's not as good as we thought. And we're saying, he's just running. He was running, like, right inside, right into the linebacker.
I mean, we play enough teams that run the stretch play. Let's try it a couple times. And I know it's a different type of blocking scheme, but I'm sure these guys could do it. You got a guy like Maroney. I think he's going to be better than Edgerrin James.
Well, I think if they utilize him, I just think the splitting thing, my theory is, has always been on that. You ride the hot hand. You can see as a coach who's running well that day. Forget the one guy's got 11, the other guy's got 12. Last game, as much as I like Maroney, Dillon should have carried the ball 20 times.
Yeah.
It was his game. He had a chip on his shoulder. It was a mutter. You know, he was bruising. He's pounding people. That's a Corey Dillon game. If he's not going to carry it 20 times in that game, then what's he on the team for?
Ron in Port St. Lucie is on the phone. Ron, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I see John in Palm Bay just north of us got off.
Yeah, a lot of people in Florida. What's going on down there today?
Well, I'm more talking about last night when I was out enjoying my dart night, and one of them moments where it's kind of like the space shuttle blows up. You just can't forget sitting there waiting for my turn. You look up, Patriot sign, Testa Verde. And being down here, you have fans from, you know, all over the country. You know, one of the guys we're playing against was a Colt fan, and you got Cleveland Brown fans and Jet fans and New York Giant fans. And I just felt a little bit of Patriot pride just kind of dwindle away. I understand all the reasons and the possible pros with it, but, you know, you're still walking around. We didn't win it last year, but you still have some of that pride, 3 out of 4. And then all of a sudden that news comes across and people were laughing. I'm out there. People were just laughing. I'm like, my God, I couldn't even defend it.
You were actually embarrassed that the Patriots signed Vinny Testaverde.
I hate to say it, yes, but people were out there laughing. I just happened to be out. The news comes across and people were laughing. I'm like, oh my God.
But the guy's not going to play.
I understand. I mean, like, they're short on coaches, and they want to give maybe Brady someone to bounce. So if they want to give Brady someone I'm getting all flustered. If they want to give Brady someone to talk to with, you know, fellow experience, I mean, heck, you throw him on the sideline. Give him a quarterback coaching job or something. I just don't get it.
Well,
this should have been done. You know, we wanted to do it fine, preseason.
I can see a lot of people kind of snickering that they signed a 43-year-old quarterback, but I don't see the harm in it. I mean, they had, what, two runs?
No, to make or break a season, I don't think it's going to happen.
It's not going to make or break the season. That's the point.
It's not going to make or break the season, but it was embarrassing, and I couldn't even feel like I couldn't defend it. I sat there, people were laughing. You got the Jet fans, the Giant fans. Of course, I'm playing with a Colt, playing against a Colt fan. That didn't help. And
Jesus, like the United Nations of the NFL down there.
Because being down here, you got people from all over the country. You know.
Now, more importantly, who won the dart game?
Well, let's not go there.
Well, you lost that too?
Now I got an excuse for losing.
What'd you do, read the scroll about Testaverde and hit somebody in the back of the head with the dart? Is that what happened?
The soft tip. They weren't even steel tip, so.
Oh, what, you don't play steel tip darts? What the hell are you two talking about?
A little bit. But anyway, yeah, get back to football.
What are steel tipped and soft tipped? You gotta be kidding me.
Well, steel tip is more of the traditional dart. It's a metal tip you throw into the.
I gotta be honest, Ron.
Soft tip is electronic.
Ron, I gotta be honest. I didn't know that people still threw darts.
Are you kidding me? Darts are huge.
Darts are huge. I didn't know that.
Right up there in Fox Woods. I was mad. I was up there. Well, like I said, I'm down in Florida, but I was up there, and I didn't even know. They had the World Series of Darts up there just a couple months ago.
Well, 12 people must have been excited to watch
it. I take that back. I can't remember if it was Fox Woods or Mohegan Sun. I can't remember.
A lot of people say that's how the Patriots pick their offensive plays. They just throw darts against the wall.
Oh, no.
No.
I think the draft's going to be big with receivers. We got to go defense, and hopefully in the third or fourth round, maybe snag a gem.
Hey, Ron, don't worry about it. The Patriots' pride will come back. By the end of the season,
I have Patriot pride now. We got them three. They can't take it away, but it just you know, kind of gets further in the picture, and then all of a sudden to see that, it's just...
What the hell's going on? Everyone has
pride when they talk about the Patriots. Oh, great team, and then just to hear. I mean, it's more than one person. Everyone in the whole bar was laughing.
Well, you ask that Colt fan how many rings does he have, and if he starts giving you any lip, you take that dart and you jab it right in his throat.
Hey, believe me, it was kind of done by a fellow Patriot fan on my team.
Oh, is that right?
And
oh, good.
He was all proud of beating Buffalo by 1 point. We're 9-0. We're 9-0. And he was all proud of that game.
Yeah, they were 9-0 last year, too.
How'd
that work out for him?
How'd that work? Was it like 13-0?
Yeah, they were like 14-0. That's right. Yeah. I don't know. So don't worry about it.
Anyway,
Hey, Gary, you know, you do a great job and everything, but you're here on Friday with Felger, and I think we need to take a cue from him.
I'm with you.
We got to cut these guys off. I mean, my God, this guy's talking about his dart game.
I'm trying to pep him up.
Who cares?
He was actually embarrassed because his friends were making fun of him.
Was he embarrassed because of that or because he was playing darts in public?
No, in my defense,
Tom, I forgot that I had the explosion sound effect.
Darts and pubs are great.
Yeah, you know what I used to do in pubs? I try to pick up tail.
Well, you do that, but, you know, you get them, you bring them in, you play, you drink your beer. Darts are fun. I used to play.
Cricket? Darts are fun for 45-year-old guys who got those refurbished basements with a TV down there. That's where you play darts.
When I lived on Comm Ave in Boston in my big, huge five-bedroom apartment, we had a big dartboard set up. We played darts all the time for drinks and stuff.
I was too busy getting drunk and having sex with girls. I don't know. I guess I didn't get it.
I hope they were overage.
They were at the time, yeah.
Were you?
I was a little older.
All right, well, we won't go. But I'm just trying to help, Ron, because I don't lose the pride yet. Too many people are jumping off the edge right now.
Well, for Christ's sakes, the guy's ready to kill himself because they signed Vinny
Testaverde. Were the Patriots playing any better at this point last year?
Signing Vinny Testaverde would be the same thing as if they signed a new ball boy. Let's be honest. In the whole grand scheme of things.
No, I think with the experience that he brings, again, I think you killed a lot of birds with one stone.
Right.
You got your third quarterback.
Another masterful move.
You got someone to help out during practice with technique. Someone to help with Brady, someone to help with Bill Belichick, and don't underestimate
Fred,
that.
Did you ever hear the knock on Testaverde? It's that he's dumb as a box of rocks. Did you ever hear the phrase Vinny the Guinea?
Not football-wise. Football-wise.
That's why he hits more guys on the run than Drew Bledsoe even
You
ever
don't last
of.
This long.
Bledsoe did.
You know,
Bledsoe did.
And he's not an idiot,
Flutie
too.
Flutie did.
Bledsoe is just stubborn. Doug Flutie was physically handicapped.
No, and Vinny Testaverde's just stupid. That's the difference. They both hit cornerbacks on the run. I don't think you want to be learning from Vinny Testaverde. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just talking about technique.
Technique. He throws a good deep ball.
What
is he going to do? Is he going to shoot Tom Brady up with steroids so his arm gets stronger?
I'm sure they don't need him to do that. Actually, you know, you laugh, but and this is probably legal. I've had what they call tennis elbow, tendonitis in the elbow, to the point where I couldn't lift up a can of Coke. It hurt that bad. And steroids is how they fixed it. The cortisone is a steroid.
Mm-hmm.
They give you the big
We drink
meals.
Pepsi here, Fred.
What's that?
We drink Pepsi here.
They give you the big needle, which is cortisone, which is a form of steroid, and it's a wonder drug. You know, so that is how they treat that. But it's legal. It's, you know... You know.
I just don't think you should be getting all emotional that they signed Vinny Testaverde.
I'm not.
No, not you. I mean the guy who wanted
I don't either. That's why I'm telling him, don't worry about it. Don't listen to these guys. You take that steel tip.
Or the
dart,
soft
you,
tip
you,
or
you
whatever
shove
kind
it in
of
their
tip
throat,
you're using.
You tell them to shut up.
Just a tip.
Josh in Waterloo, Iowa. Says, I know the Jets loss was hard to take, and I'm not saying that I'm betting the farm on the Pats winning the Super Bowl this year. There is some work to do, but I would like our fans to stand behind our team, or they can move on to be a Raider fan and be unhappy along with their players. I'll be at the game on Sunday in Green Bay to cheer on the Patriots as they go against Favre at Lambeau. You can bet I'll be cheering like the Pats are 9-0. Couple of questions. What do you like of our secondary? I think they are a Champ Bailey, even though he got blown up by Ben, type of corner away from winning some more games. That's a long way, though. Also, is Bruschi playing up to his standards? He seems to be quiet in his stats and emotions. Is he possibly worried about his health? Sorry if this is long. Please don't hate on the Pats too much.
Well, first let me say that I'm kind of sick and tired of all the Fred Kirsch Homer emails that criticize
fans. Well, this is Patriots.com,
Tom. I'm talking about they criticize other fans if they bring up questions. Now, listen, if you're saying Tom Brady stinks, you deserve to get all the abuse that comes in. But if you're questioning play calling or why this isn't working or why that isn't working, that doesn't make you any less of a fan than a guy who just goes and screams, "Woo, Teddy Bruschi's great."
That's correct.
And you know what? If you want to cheer so loud, why don't you try coming to Gillette Stadium? Because They need
their help. Yeah.
I don't think Bruschi's playing. I think he's having one of his worst seasons as a pro.
I think when Junior Seau turns out to be your most productive linebacker.
Right. That's a problem.
You got problems.
Yeah.
And that's no disrespect to Junior Seau.
But we were kind of snickering when they signed him, and now he's...
I mean, thank God for him. I mean, and when he came in, what he's done has allowed Vrabel to go outside and instead of being outside and Bannekane, it allowed Bannekane to continue in his spot role, you know, in situational type role. But I think Bruschi and Vrabel, and Colvin. I think Colvin started the year out pretty strong, but all three of them have kind of tapered off a little bit. And in a 3-4, those are the guys that need to make the plays.
Right, because if you're telling me Richard Seymour doesn't make plays because of scheme and the linebackers aren't making plays, well, who's making plays?
Right. So I think the front seven, you know, have to get together and really figure, you know, as a team, really have one of those come to Jesus meetings and just say, you know, we have to do better. You know, and I think the defensive backfield, and now Harrison's a big loss, but, you know, a lot of people are picking on Ellis Howes, but I don't think he's played that bad, you know?
You know what his problem is? He's there and he needs to do a better job of playing the ball. You know what I mean? Like that play on Sunday, that's inexcusable. You couldn't have better position. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got to go up and knock that ball away. And he did it once in the Colts game, too, where he was there and he didn't knock the ball away. So we got an email about it. That's not only one of the toughest things for a corner to learn. It's something that they either kind of have or they don't have. Like guys like Deion Sanders were just phenomenal at knowing when the ball was in the air and looking up and knocking it away.
Right.
And that's something you need to get quickly, because if you don't have it, you're going to get a lot more of those completions, even if he does have good coverage.
Jan is from Australia. He says, you really appreciate it from a guy who lives out here in Australia and can hardly keep up with the Patriots. If it wasn't for you guys, I don't know how I could live. Now to my topic, Tom Brady. I will sum up why he isn't playing well. If you really think about it, Tom isn't up for all the teaching that everyone's saying he can do. He can't be the mentor to Matt Castle whilst also trying to be on the same page with at least four new receivers who really aren't proven in the NFL. It's just too much. And I honestly think that is the case. I think the Patriots need to bring in a proven veteran quarterback to help out with at least the mentoring of Matt and to also help coach Brady as well. So there you go. I mean, he wrote this last night in preparation for this show before the Testaverde announcement was made.
Sounds like you.
No, it's Jan from Australia. So he also sent a picture for you of Peyton Manning with his head bowed down because he knows you hate Peyton Manning.
No, I mean, I get the point that I think maybe Brady's got too much pressure on him doing a bunch of different
things. And I think Bill Belichick does too, frankly.
But now whose fault's that?
It's Belichick's. Bill's fault.
Right.
And he has, and I think that he understands that. He understands that. But I don't think whether it's players or coaches that Belichick's the type of guy to just sign guys because they're there. I mean, we've seen it with players.
Yeah, but don't you think when you have an opening, okay, say the offensive coordinator position's open. Now, Bill Belichick knows a ton of people in college and pro football. Don't you think it's a little wiser to bring in a few people, sit them down, talk with them, see what their philosophy
might
be?
Well, I'm sure he has.
But it seems like they just kind of really quickly promote from within.
Yeah, I mean, You know, Testaverde, for example, they've been looking at him for weeks.
No, I understand
that. It's not like this is a snap decision.
I understand they were looking at him for weeks, but they didn't really bring in a lot of coaches and, you know.
I don't know. Do you know that?
We would have found out.
Urban Meyer he talks to.
Yeah. Well, let's hope he doesn't bring him in, or Brady will be getting hurt a lot more often on those quarterback draws.
Talk to Tony La Russa.
I know, but I'm just saying, you would think with all the people that he knows, if he has openings, he would try to cap as many resources as possible.
I personally think that he's tried to take on too much, and that's his fault, and I think maybe now he's realizing that. That's just my opinion.
All right.
I don't know. But week after week, you know, we get those visiting the opponent rosters, and their coaching staff's, 30 to 50% bigger than our coaching staff. You know, and you got to wonder, are we just that much better? But I think that with the rosters as big as they are now, you got 8 guys in the practice squad now. And, there's a lot of people out there that you have to manage.
And maybe when you got guys like Crennel and Weiss who have been here for so long.
And you kind of think as one. A very good point.
He doesn't have to oversee them quite as much as he does the other guys.
That's a good point. You know, Josh McDaniels could turn out to be a better offensive coordinator than Charlie Weiss ever was, but still he's young.
Right, so he has to watch him.
Right. Sean McLaughlin says, just want to chime in this week. I feel a loss this week, and as you might as well open the show for the next six weeks with Jim Mora. Playoffs? it's not a good situation right now. I felt down, but okay with the loss to the
playoffs.
There you go, that's him. But it's not just the loss of the Jets. It's the whole thing of players commenting on being outcoached, Belichick giving the Jets bulletin board material, Brady thinking too much. We could go on and on, but for the first time since the 2000 season, I feel this team is not acting like a team.
Well, watch it, Sean, because people will say you're not a real Patriots fan because you didn't say Teddy Bruschi was great.
Not to harp on the past, and the media is really having a field day with this, but you have to believe there is more to Belichick-Mangini fiasco. Maybe Mangini wanted players and coaches and was not focused on the Denver game, a la Parcells with the Super Bowl, and that has Belichick a little peeved. Maybe Belichick feels he wasn't ready, but Belichick did give a statement about him when he did get the job. My guess here is there is more than just Belichick just upset that Eric left. Oh, I know there is.
Yeah.
I can guarantee it.
I think the Deion Branch thing has something to do with it.
Yeah, I think, the Patriots accused the Jets of tampering with Deion Branch. I'm sure there's a bunch of things that Belichick's upset with. Sean goes on to say, I think Vinny will be a good sounding board for Brady, but do you feel Brady is missing Branch, and is Deion Branch the one free agent the Pats can't overcome, and is Belichick outsmarting himself?
I don't know. It seems like a lot of people were really upset when Branch left, and I don't know. Brady, he hasn't been himself all year. It's kind of hard to pinpoint. It really is. You don't know if he's somewhat hurt, if he's taken on too much, but he's missing throws that he usually makes in his sleep.
Yeah. I mean, he's throwing behind guys. I mean, I've sat in the press box many, many games with Paul and Andy and even you. I think where the beginning of the game was said, oh, he's really too jacked up. He's overthrowing guys.
That was Kansas City.
He does that a lot. He's done that a lot, where he starts off the game not in a rhythm, overthrowing guys, making some bad throws, and then he gets into the groove later in the game. But, we're seeing now that he's not getting over that early.
No, you're sitting there watching the game and you're waiting for it.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're kind of waiting for, okay, they got the ball back. Brady's going to lead them down, but it's not happening.
No.
And it's hard to pinpoint.
It's hard
why
to pinpoint because there's just so many other things, too. If Kevin Falk makes that pass against the Colts, and the Patriots end up tying that game up, and we're not even having this conversation.
Right.
It's back to the good old Tom Brady. So it's really hard. Winning solves everything. They go out, they beat Green Bay, and beat the Bears. Everything will be fine again. Sean says, We signed Testaverde. This is wonderful. This is the midseason move that we've all been waiting for. All hail Scott Pioli. I guess Scott is trying to get an offseason shuffleboard team assembled, and he is off to a great start. Maybe Doug Flutie can come back too. Heck, Roman Pfeiffer and Otis Smith are getting looked up on the Rolodex any day now. Junior Seau may be a late addition. He's to the shuffleboard. Okay, enough sarcasm and being a smartass. Is Matt Cassel hurt? If he is not, why are they wasting a roster spot on a stiff like Vinny Testaverde when he can't throw more than 10 yards anymore? They couldn't sign a special team specialist or another linebacker? This one really leaves me scratching my head. What have you guys heard?
Well, my guess is that Testaverde can still throw the ball 60 yards with no problem in the air because his arm has always been phenomenal. I've seen him throw 80 back in his heyday. So that wouldn't be a problem. But, I mean, who are you going to sign? Like, whose spot is he taking, Fred? You know,
right.
And Chidi Awoma or whatever his name was. Like, boy, he was such a star that he missed a big tackle on a special teams play that led to, like, a 50-yard return. Well, they need linebackers. We've known that since the draft. But they're going to find one now? Who? You tell me who. And
that's the thing. And they can sign a linebacker, but is he going to do anything?
No.
He's just going to.
He's going to come into this.
Inactive on game day.
Right. He's going to come into this system and know what he's doing.
Absolutely. All right. James from Roanoke Rapids is on the phone. James, how you doing?
How y'all doing today?
Good.
Yeah, I thought I'd call and give you a sense of something I just thought of about the coaching situation.
Okay.
Yeah. What is the one constant that Patriots have enjoyed for the last 5 years?
Fred Kirsch.
No, actually, it's a Tom Brady that they can count on to be the big game Brady, not the those interceptions Brady and missed receivers. Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm with you.
Yeah. So the coaches, they're still expecting Brady to, you know, come out, start playing like he did the last few years. But it seems like he's not making it doing that. He's not improving. He's not becoming the big game Brady like he has in the past. He had a bad game or two in the past, but he would just come right back the next week and be play real good.
Yeah.
So now they're going to – I think they're a little slow adjusting to that.
Well, I mean, you know, he lit it up in Minnesota, and we thought that Tom Brady was back. He's had two games in a row where he hasn't played that well. I think it's a little premature to say that it's all Brady, because if he comes out against Green Bay, which he very well could, and lights it up again, then what?
Don't care. They're ranked 32nd against the pass, and they stink.
No,
I understand.
See him
do it against Chicago.
But, you know, is it more the protection than it is Brady? Is Brady just not confident? I don't know.
I think it's probably
a
combination
things.
Of all the
things. I think it's something in his head, maybe something wrong with his arm. And the receivers, he's just having a little trouble getting used to his receivers, you know. And like I said, the coaching staff needs to make some adjustments there and start using the run more.
But
and,
what if your receivers stink and this is as good as it gets?
Well, they played pretty decent last week.
Who? Other than Rashay Caldwell, who had a good game. What, Jabbar Gaffney caught a couple of passes. Now
but
we
I didn't
put him
see
in the
them drop any either, Tom. I mean, it's not like guys are dropping balls.
Are they getting open though all the time?
I don't know.
And the one thing I've noticed, that teams are starting to get used to the Patriots when they make a good run or get a first down, then they turn around and try to throw deep, and they're getting used to that. So they got to go away from that. They got to start running more and using the short passing game to move the ball down the field and use more ball control than trying to make the big play and hit a quick hit.
Well, I don't mind taking that shot every once in a while. It'd be better if they connected on it once in a while.
Yeah, that's what the problem is. They're not, and the people are sitting there waiting for it.
They got to loosen it up. They got to loosen up the defense somehow. But I just think that Brady has enough weapons at his disposal between the tight ends, receivers, and running backs that he has, that they should be able to get that ball into open areas a little bit more. You know, you can't cover everyone. That's a fact in the NFL. And then it just comes down to giving your quarterback time.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, Tom said it at the beginning of the show, that could be the number one problem right now, is Brady doesn't feel he has the time. In Minnesota, I mean, my God. It was like he could have a sit-down dinner with all the time. But that, we found out afterwards, is because Brad Childress was so stubborn, he wouldn't get out of his base set.
Yeah, and another thing is the signing of Testaverde might have been a knee-jerk reaction, because last Sunday he was driven hard into the field. If it hadn't been muddy, it hadn't been one of those hard, frozen fields, you'd never know. He might not get up on that hit.
Well, that's a good point. That could have pushed them over the edge. I think even Belichick said they felt they were skating on a little thin ice. And that could have been the straw that broke the camel's back, where they said, you know what, we're lucky he walked out of this game alive.
I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, let's get that guy on board now. So thanks for the call, Ron, from Port St. Louis. No, that was who? James from Roanoke Rapids. All right, let's take a break. It's 1 o'clock. We got plenty more emails. We're going to get to them when we come back.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks, and more. With Patriots Gridiron Grillers, you don't have to wait for the game for that great stadium taste. Gridiron Grillers are available at Agar and CNS Wholesalers, Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farms, Shaw's, Stop and Shop, and at your local supermarket. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Bank of America would like to take a moment to let you hear what our home equity line of credit sounds like. You see, if you want to remodel the kitchen...
It smells great, hon.
Or renovate the bathroom.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my...
Or fix up anything around the house, Bank of America's home equity line of credit is the easy, low-cost way to make it all happen. There's no paperwork to bring, so applying is simple. And you'll have access to your money just about everywhere, by phone, online, and at our banking centers nationwide. All of which makes putting that pool in the backyard a little less of a dream and a little more of a reality. So whether you want to have the pros handle it or do it yourself, a Bank of America home equity line of credit is your ticket. Apply today. Just visit bankofamerica.com, call 1-800-900-9000, or stop by your neighborhood banking center.
Clementine.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Bank of America. Higher standards. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords. 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves.
Come on.
This is PFW in progress.
Hello, fellas. Everybody's here. Freddy, Tom, good to see you.
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
I do you a favor and take Freddy in when you're having a bad time, and then you try to push me out. I gotta kick asses sometimes to make it run right. We had a little argument, Freddy and I, so I had to straighten him out. He was banging cocktail waitresses two at a time.
Paul Perillo.
Come over here, kid. Learn something. You start out with a little bit of oil. Then you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes and tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Cut the crap. I got more important things for you to do. How's Paulie?
Oh, Paulie. Won't see him no more.
And Andy. And Andy?
I can handle things. I'm smart. I'm like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart. And I want respect.
Andy Hart.
I know it was you. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
Some guy named Tom.
Tom's no longer consigliere. Gonna be our lawyer in Vegas. There's no reflection on Tom, but that's the way I want it.
Mike, why am I out?
You're not a wartime consigliere, Tom. Things may get rough with the move we're trying.
Maybe I could help.
You're out, Tom.
PFW in progress.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
All right, back here in PFW in progress, Fred Kirsch and Tom Casale. Webradio at patriots.com is the email address. It's webradio at patriots.com. Andy in Sioux City, Iowa says, why did we sign a 65-year-old quarterback that can't move? We may as well get Bledsoe back here, too. I don't understand what we're doing. Is Brady or Castle hurt more than we know? I did not get to see the Jets game, and when I initially saw the score, I was very surprised. But after I saw the field conditions, I felt a little better until I remembered that the Patriots used to always win in those conditions. My confidence has been shaken. Who didn't think when Brady got the ball in the Colts game at the end with a chance to tie the game that we wouldn't score a touchdown? My confidence level in this team is regressing back to the old days when we just couldn't quite win the big games. Do you think the players are losing confidence? I don't see the swagger. I did receive some good news in the mail yesterday. It was my November 1st PFW, which was the Vikings game. The gods must have known I was going to need some good news. You just got it yesterday? That's unacceptable, Andy.
Yeah. Why does that happen?
Well, it's the post office. It gets, there's many, you know, depending on where it is in the country, there's many stops along the way. And if one of those stops, they decide not to process that mail right away, it gets delayed. But that's ridiculous. Yeah. 2 weeks to get, I don't know.
He's going to be pissed when I find out they lost the last two games.
You don't want the next two, trust me.
But Troy Brown breaks the record.
We don't want to ruin it for you.
Let's see. Russell from the Sun-Dried OC says...
Is that Early Doucette?
Early... Yeah, Russell Doucette?
Yeah.
Why? What do you call Early?
Because there's a receiver for LSU named Early Doucette.
Oh, is that right? He says, as the bitter taste of losing to the Jets lingers heavy in the air, these thoughts now meander through my mind like restless wind inside a letterbox.
He's getting all...
Yeah. Why sign Testaverde?
I have no idea.
Man, people are really upset about this.
I'd rather have Grogan if you're going to have an old QB.
Hey, Grogan said
anymore.
The same thing. Watch it today.
Perhaps the fact the O-line is a mess escapes Mr. Bill. After seeing the D-line play Sunday, they better sign Warren when the time comes. What if he decides to pull a branch and Wilfork does as well? What do you think the percentage is Brady has some sort of surgical procedure to his throwing arm this offseason? I'm saying at least 80%. And what's the logic in benching Gabriel? The receiving core is thinner than Nicole Richie, so how will this help? I'll admit I'm extra pissed about this loss because I hate Pennington. He's been overhyped since he got into the league. I remember that Sunday night game on ESPN, the last time the Jets beat the Patriots, and their female sideline reporter did everything but proclaim her love for him while interviewing him.
I want to kiss you.
I also hate Dallome, Vic, Breeze, and Grossman as well, in that order. Thanks, guys. Love the show. And, Paul, you're so lucky to have two Super Bowl rings. Look at you with the bling. Can't wait to see them up for auction someday on eBay.
Why does he hate Drew Brees?
I don't know.
I mean, the other guys he mentioned I've heard before, but who hates Drew Brees?
I don't know. He's a quarterback hater.
I guess so.
Antonio, Fort Pierce, Florida. I know that everyone might be tired of the whole Belichick-Mangini soap opera, but I have a few things to add. First, Bill Belichick is a sad excuse for a human being.
What?
I know that you guys, Fred excluded, might feel the same way, but you're afraid of insulting Lord Bill and don't want to lose your jobs. The guy's a jerk. I don't care how many Super Bowls the guy has won or will win. He didn't do it by himself. If I was Bob Kraft, I would be embarrassed by such a lack of professionalism from one of my employees. Who does Belichick think he is to be so disrespectful towards Mangini and the Jets team?
My favorite was, hey, mix in a salad.
Mangini left, so what? This is a free country. You can work whatever, wherever you want. He is a grouch who likes to bully people, and his thoughtless, sarcastic answers in press conferences are one of a few examples. Maybe Tony Dungy never wins Super Bowls, but he is a successful
with Andy Hart.
He's
a good
for?
Person who respects himself and other people. I would be proud to have him as my coach. Bill needs to grow up like the rest of us because in the rest of the business world, if you act like a jackass, you'll be treated like one and probably fired. It's obvious that this crap is nothing but a distraction to everybody and something needs to be done about it. Signed, Ron Borges. Oh, jeez.
Man, was that a rip job.
Well, look, is Belichick the nicest person in the world?
No.
Does he hold a grudge? Yes. And it wasn't just because Eric Mangini went to the Jets that he's feeling this way, I guess. Because Romeo Crennel left, Charlie Weiss left, you know.
What do you want me to tell you?
Other people have left. So
unexcused.
Well, and if I was Mangini, I wouldn't care. You know, who cares? If he doesn't want to talk to you, move on.
Right. Mike in Nashville writes, and yesterday Tom and Paul were discussing the Belichick-Mangini nonsense, and Paul suggested that Bill may simply be upset because Eric left the organization sooner than Bill had anticipated. I've heard rumors down here that the strife was actually caused by Mangini's actions following the Denver playoff loss, and that he had already accepted the Jets' position and was recruiting Patriot players on the plane ride home. I was wondering,
he can have Matt Chatham.
I was wondering if you guys had also heard this and if you lent any credence to it. If it's true, it would be rather interesting considering the way Belichick and Parcells split company. I don't think that that's true.
I don't either. I don't think he had the job on the way back from Denver.
Even if he did, I don't think he'd be that disloyal and stupid to be doing that on the plane.
That sounds like something people are trying to make up to find a reason for it. And
yeah, I think it has to do maybe with the tampering situation, and there's probably other things that we don't know about.
And listen, let's be honest. Let's say that you hired me, you helped me out and everything, and I get a job somewhere else, and then I screw you somehow. You're going to be mad at me.
Of course.
You know what I mean? You're
going to
be like, that little piece of, took him in and I made him who he is. And
right, sure.
So now if if all that tampering stuff's true, I think that's probably what it is, because Belichick's saying, I had this guy on my staff for 10 years and now he comes and does this. He doesn't.
No.
So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Mike says also the guy seemed to get on Jamie from Houston pretty hard yesterday when he suggested the bye week helped out the Jets on Sunday. I believe all Jamie was saying was that an extra week to prepare for an opponent is going to aid scheming coaches of the Belichick ilk, like Mangini. And Paul and Tom somehow interpreted it as Jamie saying bye week equals victory for every team in the league. I'm not saying, nor do I think Jamie was, that it was the sole factor in the Jets' win, but to completely discount it as a factor in the outcome of the game just seems silly.
I discount it completely. The Patriots weren't ready to play. Did the Patriots have a bye week? They weren't ready to play. They didn't feel like playing. They showed no emotion, much like they have in virtually every game this year. They didn't have bye weeks before then, the other teams. So I don't want to hear it. All teams have bye weeks throughout the season. Played none. That's what I say. Zero in the defeat. You know why they lost? Because they stunk on Sunday. That's why.
One quick question. I'll be in Nashville for the final game of the season, and up until now I had no interest in the Pats-Titans game. Do you think recent events will make the game meaningful, and therefore should I start looking for tickets, or do you think things will be more or less decided by the final week of the season?
Well, I think it'll be meaningful for draft position.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you. I'm telling you, at the end of the year, I'll be the only one that could say I've stuck with him throughout the whole season.
Hey, that was just a joke, Fred.
All right. Shane from Miami. Was Garrett Mills really hurt when he went on IR? It smells like Garrett just couldn't accomplish much so far this season, and the Pats stuck him on IR to gain his roster spot without having to cut him. Any insight? I think that's true, because what Belichick said was, it was less than, well, Garrett Mills hurt, he did say he wasn't getting any better, but he also said we sacrificed tight end
depth
for quarterback depth. Mm-hmm. So he did still consider Garrett Mills depth.
Right.
So that tells me he wasn't completely unable to play.
Yeah, my guess is he's got a strain somewhere, and now he's on IR.
Let's see, Mike Mack writes in, hey guys, I live in California and flew out to Boston last weekend for the Jets-Pats game. It was a frustrating game. At least there was a little hope at the end there. My cousin wanted to leave before the second-to-last drive we had when we got the touchdown. Luckily, we stayed for the only excitement of the game. Just want to thank you for the recommendation of the Union Oyster House. It was a great meal and a fantastic atmosphere. Someone emailed you last week asking if you knew any good eating spots. Thanks again. I had a fun time in Boston, but that rain on Sunday made me realize how much nicer it is out here in sunny California.
Okay. That's nothing, my friend.
Yeah. Wait till come here when it snows.
Yeah.
So he ate at the Union Oyster House. That's good. Tom, you're fairly new to the region.
I knew this was coming. No, I've never eaten there.
What's the best restaurant you've eaten out at since you've been here?
Boy, you're going to be mad at me.
You haven't. What?
Domino's? We've gone out like once, I think. Oh. I don't even know where it was. We just, we're trying to save money right now. We really don't go out to eat.
I know the best restaurant you've been to in the last 10 years.
What's that?
Billy Ogden's.
Oh, yeah. We usually, when we go out, it's usually Panera Bread. That's a big night out for us.
Okay.
Although that is about as expensive as going to a steakhouse.
Panera's great, though.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
It's pretty expensive.
It's not that bad.
Well, for that kind of place, I mean, you know, like
you like tuna?
Sandwich. I don't mind tuna.
They make a great tuna there.
Do they?
Oh.
I'll
get
try
get a tuna sandwich. Next time you're there, it's delicious.
All right. I'll try it.
And I'm a big tuna guy. Certain tuna I won't eat.
Right, like the one on the plane.
Yeah,
it's
I don't
too
like
fishy.
That. Yeah, too fishy. And, like, you know, even the stuff you buy in the can, I like Bumblebee. But some of that other stuff, I can't stand it.
All right, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
What in the hell is like going on?
Edward Daddario says, I disagree with you saying that the Patriots receiving corps is garbage. The fact of the matter is that the Patriots are a different style team now trying to play a different game. They are not a short passing team anymore. The West Coast offense is no longer useful. The Patriots are a power running team.
They've never ran the West Coast offense.
No, they have all aspects of a running team. Power with Dillon, speed with Maroney, and screen a short third down back with Fogg. It's not that the receivers suck. It's the fact that the Patriots rely too much on receiving because everyone can see we have receivers that can catch but not necessarily useful on all four downs. I don't understand the email at all. That back part, no.
I think he contradicted the entire email.
Yeah. You know, somebody brought it up in, I don't know if it was Monday's press conference or last week. You know, it might have been Mike Reese. You know, do the Patriots have an identity on offense? What kind of team are they?
They don't.
You know, like the Steelers are known for smash-mouth running. And Belichick said, you know what? They pass the ball as much as anyone.
Yeah,
you know?
But when they get that, the good Steeler teams, when they got that lead, they just mash it.
Well, so did the Patriots.
You know? But we're talking right now.
Yeah.
Like,
the Patriots don't get a lead anymore.
Well, right.
But when they do, they smash mouth it with Dillon.
Well, when?
The Bengals?
What did he have? 14
they had 240 something yards.
I know, but him and Maroney split them.
Maroney
had a huge game
but
in that game.
Split, but the point is, they ran the ball down the Bengals' throat once they had the lead.
And that's tough to do.
But I just think that if they had the opportunity
this
year, they'd do the same.
Who's the number one receiver? Rashay Caldwell?
You'd have to say that
okay,
right now.
Okay, they play the Broncos in the playoffs. Hello, Champ Bailey. Let me know how the receiving corps does for you.
Okay, well, by then they'll be better.
We'll see. I'm just talking about the receivers. Don't tell me the receivers are great, because if Rashay Caldwell's your number one, you can forget about him catching a pass against the
Broncos.
They're
not great, but Brady is, and that makes them even
Brady
better.
Brady is great, but the problem is that he doesn't have time. Guys aren't keeping
open. I know,
open.
I know.
I mean, he can't, Fred, as good as Brady is, he can't throw the ball to himself. I wish he could, but he can't.
Elgidio says, you have a good point, guys, on Tom Brady possibly having a tendonitis flare up in his shoulder or elbow. But Brady has been on the injury report for like 3 or 4 years. If this is a legitimate injury, there isn't some kind of treatment, or isn't there some kind of treatment that Tom can go through in the off season to help alleviate some of the discomfort? Has it really bothered him for so long? Well, I'll say this, though. Putting Brady on the injury report every game for 2 years masks the fact when he really is injured.
Right. It's like the boy who cries wolf.
Right. So you really don't know when the guy really is injured. So this time maybe he could be.
The tendonitis is, you really can't do much for that.
It's just rest.
Yeah.
It's the only thing you can do.
So.
I mean, but the cortisone helps.
Right.
You know?
You take cortisone shots, but there's really.
It's going to come back eventually.
There's no surgical procedure for it.
No. It's painful as hell, though.
Yeah.
You know? Mike from Columbus, Ohio. Seems to me the biggest questions for the Patriots won't be answered until January and hopefully February, so I'm focusing my attention on the Ohio State versus Michigan game. Just wondering which players in the next game might be of interest to the Patriots in the next draft. Any predictions for the score? His prediction is Ohio State 24, Michigan 13.
Well, I like Michigan to win, so.
Really?
Yeah. I like 2017 Michigan. Lamar Woodley in the defense. I think is going to be too much. I don't think Ohio State's faced a team this good yet.
After you thought Michigan would lose to Indiana?
Well, yeah, I was wrong. They impressed me by whooping the crap out of them. But I think in general, I just thought, you know me, Gary, I play spots. I'm a spot guy.
Yeah, so is this a tip that you're getting?
No, Lloyd Carr's getting 7 points on the road. He's got no pressure on him. See, you got to be worried if Michigan was ranked one and Ohio State was ranked two. Then you'd really be worried because Lloyd Carr would be about as conservative.
I think there's no way Ohio State loses this game.
But we'll have to see. I think Michigan wins the game. I think their defense is the best in the country by far. And Ohio State's defense is a little bit overrated because of the competition they played.
Oh, man, that DR has a log splitter now. Man, they got everything.
Guys like talking to a kid.
Matt from Southie. Hey, guys, I'm on board with the notion that some of the Pats' offensive woes come from the receiving corps, but one name that I haven't heard as being the blame is the offensive coordinator. To my untrained eye, the Jets appeared to play a similar defense as the Colts the previous week, and the Pats really didn't do anything to counter. Also, they seem to get away from plays and configurations that are working. The sequence which comes to mind are the plays following Corey's 50-yard run, in which I believe they had four plays within the red zone, including a Jets penalty, and failed to score. I'm just a little surprised that I haven't heard McDaniel's name from any of you talking heads. Does the bulk of play calling come down from Belichick or McDaniels? If it is McDaniels, it is unreasonable to think that Belichick might take. Is it unreasonable to think that Belichick might take over more of the play calling? I seem to recall that Bill Parcells took the play calling away from Charlie Weiss 1 year in New York. That's true. P.S. Tom, how about those Hoosiers?
Well, McDaniels is taking it on the chin, much like those Hoosiers around here. But I have to agree. I mean, Belichick, listen, him and Parcells, they can't have it both ways. I told you guys all last year, and you know this, Fred, that Sean Payton was a scapegoat in Dallas. Now, he's gone to New Orleans.
Done pretty
and they
well.
They haven't had any problem scoring any points, all right? So Parcells and Belichick run the show.
Yep.
They run the entire show. And as Paul pointed out on here, McDaniels may call the plays, but the game plan's put in by Belichick. He knows what Belichick likes. And the one thing problem I think they have is I think guys like Parcells and Belichick, they need people like Charlie Weiss who yell right back at them. Because I think if Weiss had something that he didn't like and he didn't think would work, he would tell Belichick, listen, you stupid, you know, this isn't going to, you know, effing work, and those type of things. And I just think a guy like Belichick needs that because him and Parcells have that kind of bully mentality about them. And if they can push people around, you need people that push back. And I think Weiss was good at doing that.
I think, you know, you guys can laugh at me, but I think one of the benefits of having Vinny Testaverde here is he's going to help Belichick.
All right.
Pat from Ireland. Love the show. Just like to say I don't like all the crap I hear from the media about Belichick and bad coaching. Bill is a great coach, and he doesn't get stupid overnight. He didn't take stupid pills. He's not Andy Hart. Seymour shouldn't complain about the coaching. Maybe he should hang up his cell phone and get off his ass and start making some damn plays.
You reach Richard Seymour.
Sign Tom Casale.
I think that this week there's a lot of soul searching going on in this team.
So now, okay, good point. Now, I see you finally made a good point. It took you an hour and a half. You made a good point. There's a lot of soul searching. You said there's going to be a lot of talking with each other. That's why I say this is a big game, because when you do that kind of stuff, and if you go lay another egg, then things can start to unravel.
But if they do those things and they play well, and it's just one of those weird games, unlucky, I don't think it's a catastrophic loss.
Right.
If they do those things and you know what, the bed, we got problems.
Right.
I'll give you that. That's why I said on our show, it's not if they win, it's how they play this game.
I understand, but I think they could play the Bears. I think they could play them well and lose. I find it hard to believe they could play well against the Packers and lose. That's my only point.
That could be, but the Packers have been playing better this year.
They got lost by two touchdowns at Buffalo 2 weeks ago.
Tom, this is the team that you said, if I ever pick the Packers this week, shoot me in the head.
Right.
You know, but they've been winning. They've
right.
won four games.
I understand that. But 2 weeks ago, they went to Buffalo and got blown out.
Buffalo's got a pretty good defense. They did better against the Colts than the Patriots.
I'll tell you what.
Buffalo could have won that game.
He's coming off two losses, going on the road playing a 4-5 NFC team. If they lose this week, I will be stunned.
Okay, listen.
I'll be stunned.
And if they lose this week, I'm going to be very hard to deal with next week, okay? I'll give you that.
All right.
I'll be on edge.
All right.
I'll be on edge. Let's see.
I think they'll win, though, and I think they'll win rather easily.
I hope you're right. Brian writes in. He says, first of all, now I know why we kept Cap Room. We just signed Vinny, and I just threw up in the back of my throat. Jeez, people are just...
Boy, they do not like
Vinny. They just
think
that this guy's going to come out and play next week. They've gone... how many weeks in a row have they gone with that extra roster spot?
Right.
It's not like they gave up anything to get him.
Is Bill Parcells the head coach here?
No.
Well, then he's not going to play.
Right.
It's that simple.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they had to cut Teddy Bruschi to bring Vinny Testaverde in. They had a roster spot open.
You would feel better if they signed Charles Rogers because you saw him play at Michigan State. And they know his name, and they saw him catch a nice touchdown against Notre Dame once, despite the fact that he's fat, out of shape, has a terrible attitude, and can't catch on with a team. But people would like that signing. I just don't get it.
Anyway, some interesting statistics. No team has ever won the Super Bowl after losing a regular season game to the Jets. I don't know if that's true, but if it is,
I think it is. I've heard it before.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure about that one, but I do know no team with Vinny Testaverde has ever won the Super Bowl. He's not going to play, guys. Anyway, on to business. I agree with Tom. Seymour should keep quiet and show us something on the field. He seems to be a non-factor. I respect what he's done in the past, but enough is enough. Where is the impact player that we're used to? Is he relegated to just being a body?
Well, thank you.
For the amount of money they're paying him, he better not.
Well, and here's the thing. You guys keep telling me it's the system, yet I used to watch on TV and used to watch last year him making plays in the system. He's in the same system. And my point is this. The Jets would have a lot of second and fives, right? Then they would run the ball and make it like third and two, which means they could either run or pass and give them options. Richard Seymour used to, on some of those second and fives, he used to come through the line and tackle the running back for a 3-yard loss and then put you in third and long. He doesn't do that anymore. I mean, I barely hear his name called. You can't blame that on the system. I'm sorry.
Steve writes in, I guess there was something yesterday you guys were talking about whether or not the Patriots mentioned they won Super Bowls on their website or something like that.
Yeah, someone said that there's banners up on the website, and he said, take them down, stop living in the past.
Well, I think on the splash page, there's a thing that says home of the 3-time champion New England Patriots.
Okay.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
All right. So this is Steve. What's your problem, Steve, with that? Anyway, he says, at any rate, I wasn't saying the Patriots can't win this year. I'm just saying even if they do, it's not the same team as 03 and 04. That is MM3 and MM4 for Tom. I don't know.
Oh, I don't
know.
Who just
destroyed everyone in their path. So you guys got into some kind of debate yesterday?
Well, we did. He said there was something on the website that honored the 03 and 04 teams, and he said it
should be. And 01, by the way.
And he said they shouldn't be there because, you know, that's then and this is now.
Boy, I tell you.
People are ornery, Fred. They're ornery.
You lose a couple games, and it's just, people are just, you know. All right. Pratt Pye. P-A-I is his last name, from Germantown, Maryland. He says, as usual, you're doing a great job. Tom, gotta love your frankness, not to mention your but-you-know-why. What's that?
I don't know.
Let's not forget about your deep breath laughs. You have deep breath laughs?
Maybe. I don't really listen to the show.
I try my best to tune in on a daily basis. Love the different combinations of all four of you each day. Unfortunately, I think the Patriots are in a transition phase this year. There have been games when Brady, the receivers, the running backs have all produced, like we've been used to, the Bengals and Viking games. But there have been way too many games that could have been blowouts that were kept close and won and most recently lost. It is shocking to see that the Buffalo Bills came closer to beating the Colts and the Pats. And it will be really shocking if the Patriots can't beat the Bears after the lowest team in their division, the Dolphins, upset them at Soldier Field. They do not have a clear identity, and at the time they turn on their game, I think they clearly have problems on both sides of the ball. As much as Brady and the offense are having problems, the concerns are having problems making big plays on receivers. In my opinion, Ellis Hobbs is really not living up to expectations. However, I think that Belichick is not a coach who can tolerate losing too many games. This past week was really disappointing, and I'm sure all the coaches and players know and realize they have to reach the level of success they've had in recent past. So he goes on to say that they'll start their win streak again with the Packers. So, all right, more of a commentary email.
Yeah, and that's what I mean when you can't say that guys like that aren't fans. He's saying he feels it's a year where they're not as good as they've been and blah, blah, blah. That doesn't mean he's not a fan. It means that's his opinion. That's the way he's looking at it. Not everyone's just going to say, in Bill, we trust. As a matter of fact, some of the players aren't saying that. I'm just, hey, I didn't say it, Fred. It's in the Globe. Look it up. Or, no, actually, it's in the Herald.
Globe isn't one of those things.
No, the Globe's got it the other way. Seymour
playing the company.
Yeah, towing the company line.
PJ writes in, I don't know if you guys have seen the Packers play this year, but I was at the Eagles-Packers game Monday night earlier, and I have never seen receivers running so free through the secondary. If the Pats can't throw against this terrible secondary, then yes, Fred, the season is falling apart. Also, since when do teams go on 16-play, 80-yard drives against the Pats' D? In that type of weather, you knew that the Jets would have to run, and they did. Even though the Jets couldn't run on anybody throughout the season, I'm worried about the defense. Well, yeah, they didn't. But, you know, if you look at overall season, there's only three other teams that have given up less points per game than the Patriots.
Yeah, but it was disappointing that the Jets. I mean, I know me and Paul, when they had first and goal at the 8 and they ran it, and we said, yeah. Were they going to try to run it in? And then two plays later, they ran it in. Like, we were so sure that they couldn't get the ball in from the 8-yard line against the Patriots, yet they did.
I'm hoping that Jets game is the bottom of the season.
For the defensive line, we give them a mulligan because they've been dominant pretty much all year.
And Warren
they didn't
wasn't
have
there.
Ty Warren. Yeah. Vince Wolfert got dominated by Nick Mangold. That hasn't happened yet this year. He's been on every week. So, in that aspect, I'll give the defensive line a mulligan. The offensive line, on the other hand, they're out of mulligans.
What do we got here? A little body paint action on TV? Yikes. By the way, people are embarrassed about Vinny Testaverde.
You know I don't speak Spanish.
Maybe it's just me, but I'm a little more embarrassed by getting physically dominated by the Jets in Foxborough. Oh, well, this is a huge game this week. The Pats need to come out and make a statement. Great show. P.S. Hey, Tom. If Rutgers runs the table, which I don't think they will, do they get in the championship games, and should they get in?
If they run the table, they should get in, but they won't. They started back too far, and I don't think Arkansas is going to lose again.
Okay. Wow.
Fred is preoccupied.
Well, there's this woman on TV with body paint on.
You know I don't speak Spanish. In English, please.
My goodness. Let's see. PJ writes again. I don't understand what the big deal is. This is back to the Mangini-Belichick thing. For some reason, Belichick doesn't like Eric. None of us knows why. It could be for professional reasons or for personal reasons. I'm not going to criticize Belichick for not liking Mangini when I don't know why he doesn't like him. Also, I'm tired of hearing people complain and say things like, I would rather have Tony Dungy so I can be proud. Give me a break. I would rather have 3 rings than be the fan of a guy who was one of the biggest playoff choke artists in the league. Nobody was complaining about Belichick when the Pats were winning 3 Super Bowls, and nobody will be complaining if he wins it this year, except Andy Hart, who will be whining about his press conferences.
All right, let me ask you, I want to ask the fans a question out there and see if anyone has a good answer for it. I came here last year, and the Patriots stunk. I mean, they absolutely stunk. Would you admit that, Fred, the first half of the year?
They were
getting blown out, Fred. They got blown out by the Chargers. They got blown out by the Broncos. They got blown out by Kansas City. They were getting beat pretty good. Now, at that point, nobody questioned Belichick. If we said anything negative about anything, we got killed. Okay, so here we are a year later. They're 6-3. They're in first place in the division. And a lot of fans are questioning Belichick. They want Rich Kotite as the head coach. They want, you know, Vinny Testaverde to start over Tom Brady. So why in just a year have you changed so much? Is it because you didn't win it last year and now you're afraid you won't win it again this year? I mean, I got news for you. The Patriots aren't going to win the Super Bowl every year. It's just not going to happen.
So it sounds like you're defending the Patriots now.
Oh, I am.
Okay.
I want to know why the fans have turned so, because last year we might have gotten one of those emails every 2 weeks, you know, questioning Belichick or Tom Brady.
I think there was just so many injuries last year that people were giving them a...
But are people spoiled?
Oh, I think they're spoiled. There's no doubt about it.
Because I don't, you know, listen, if Belichick does something wrong coaching, I'll say it. If Brady doesn't play well, I'll say it. But to criticize them in general after all they've done after 9 games of one season, I think that's going a little bit too far.
Todd from Nova Scotia, I was out last night at my weekly Mahjong game when I saw the ESPN scroll that we had signed Testaverde the three old Chinese ladies I was playing with started laughing at the Patriots and throwing Mahjong tiles at me. Luckily, they were soft tiles and not the hard ones. I was completely embarrassed to be a Pats fan. Anyway,
no disrespect to the Oriental.
That was a little joke.
I know it's a
Todd,
joke.
Todd, you know what you do? You take those Mahjong tiles and you just shove them down their throat.
It'd be even funnier to me if I knew what Mahjong was.
It's this old ladies play. It's this game with tiles. It's kind of like dominoes, but not quite, you know.
I got you.
Anyway, I was completely disgusted with Belichick. I think he handled the Mangini thing way too immaturely. I think he should have headbutted Mangini in the forehead and bit him in the face. Oh, he handled it way too maturely, not immaturely. Yeah, I like that too. The headbutt and the bite in the face.
I'm always up for a good face biting.
Yeah. Let's see. Another Belichick versus Eric Mangini email.
Well, see, and you know what's funny? They'll criticize us for talking about it. We'll get an email pretty soon that says, why do you guys keep talking about this? It's because we got 35 emails on last week's game. We got a game to play this week.
Well, these losses wear on people, Tom. We're not used to this.
I know, but you got to shake it off. You got to get to the Packers. It's like the one guy said, you can throw all over them, ranked 32nd in the league in pass defense. Talk about that.
I mean, it's been since 2002 when this team has lost two games in a row.
My point is the fans will say, oh, who cares? The Mangini-Belichick thing, that's not an issue. Yet we keep getting email after email talking about it.
Well, Brian says, who cares about the personal relationship between Mangini and Belichick? Let them deal with it. I'm more concerned with the relationship between the players and the coaches and the product they put on the field. The team has a lot of issues this year. There's not been consistent positive play out of Brady since the Denver playoff game. I believe the team is not gelled on either side of the ball and is leaving too many plays on the field. There is no consistency with either unit. As Graham said on Maroney, the team is struggling to find an as Graham said on Monday, not on Maroney,
I was
on Monday.
Say, what are you talking about?
The team is struggling to find an identity. All right. Tom has to go find the bathroom. We'll be right back after this.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks, and more. With Patriots Gridiron Grillers, you don't have to wait for the game for that great stadium taste. Gridiron Grillers are available at Agar and CNS Wholesalers, Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farms, Shaw's, Stop and Shop, and at your local supermarket. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Bank of America would like to take a moment to let you hear what our home equity line of credit sounds like. You see, if you want to remodel the kitchen...
It smells great, hon.
Or renovate the bathroom.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my...
Or fix up anything around the house, Bank of America's home equity line of credit is the easy, low-cost way to make it all happen. There's no paperwork to bring, so applying is simple. And you'll have access to your money just about everywhere, by phone, online, and at our banking centers nationwide. All of which makes putting that pool in the backyard a little less of a dream and a little more of a reality. So whether you want to have the pros handle it or do it yourself, a Bank of America home equity line of credit is your ticket. Apply today. Just visit bankofamerica.com, call 1-800-900-9000, or stop by your neighborhood banking center.
Clementine.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Bank of America. Higher standards. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Let's go, let's go.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck.
Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords, 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves. Come on.
PFW in progress. Dan Heffron in Fairfax clears.
We haven't heard from him in a while.
No, he clears up. Earlier, one of our emailers said that no team has ever lost to the Jets and then won the Super Bowl. Of course, the Patriots lost to the Jets in 2001 when Mo Lewis knocked out Bledsoe.
Oh, yeah.
So they lost to the Jets that year and ended up winning the Super Bowl.
I think that used to be a stat, though.
Really?
Yeah, because I remember hearing it before. Maybe the Patriots ended that streak, but that definitely was a stat. At least in the late 90s, because I used to hear it, no team's ever lost to the Jets.
Well, after Kotite, probably. Just, well, they were just so
my
bad.
My buddy's a big Jet fan, and I remember him saying to me, he said, can you imagine rooting for a team that pathetic?
Well, that's another streak the Patriots broke then.
Yep.
Andy Hart writes
in,
Mahjong and darts. Are you going to talk about football, Fred? What's going down there? He just couldn't keep out of it, you know?
Now, you know, why doesn't he do some work?
That's what I want to know.
You know, he has to come in at like 5 o'clock on Friday morning to do all his work. You know what he's doing all week? He's gabbing like an old lady. Yap, 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 yap.
This company, because of him, he's the single reason why we had to have company-wide sensitivity training.
Yeah.
Just because of him.
Now he's up there right now yelling about us.
A.W. writes in, if your O-line is getting beat, you might want an extra quarterback. Vinny will help this team. Smart move. Well?
I don't think it's a smart move or a dumb move. I think it's a move.
I think
can it hurt?
It will help them off the field as well. I think that's a big reason why they brought him in. Donaldo from Uruguay writes in, I have a question about the Pats kicker, Guskowski. Sure looks to me like Bill Belichick has very little confidence in the guy and his field goals. Maybe he hasn't earned that confidence yet because of bad misses, point taken. But why is he the kicker then? Other than the make against the Colts from 48 yards, Bill would rather go for a 4th-and-4 from the 29 rather than kick it like most teams do. 4th-and-4 plays are probably harder to convert than 40-to-47-yard field goal.
Not for the Patriots.
Well, I think it's more of a show of lack of confidence in the team as a whole than at Guskowski, because maybe Belichick realizes 3 points isn't going to do it.
Right.
You know? Anyway, he goes on, I know the field conditions have been horrible in home games, but I get the feeling that this lack of trust in the kicker is in any stadium. There are always at least 2 or 3 veteran guys with experience that you can find at any point in the season. Are they good? No, but they are probably more reliable than this guy. If they want to develop him, put him on the practice squad, or sign another kicker with an extra roster spot, at some point they will need a big kick, and by bypassing him in semi-obvious kicking situations, you are only lowering the confidence even more. I don't agree with that email.
No, I think they're going – I mean, he may not have confidence in him, but I think it would be the opposite way. If he didn't have confidence, he'd try to get him more kicks now. You know what I mean? Until, like, if he doesn't have confidence in him now, and he may need him in the playoffs, isn't it better to get that over with right now? You know what I'm saying?
I think that he just thinks, you know, with the Colts.
Against the Colts, he knew he had to score points.
Right. And I think with the Jets, I think he could convert. You know, I think he really had confidence in his offense that he could convert
those.
Aren't
they the best in the NFL at converting on 4th down?
They were 3-for-3 on 4th down against the Jets.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, him and Parcells both go for it on 4th down quite a bit. That's always been their M.O.
Jay from Hanson, to answer your question, this is to Tom, about last year versus this year, I think a lot has to do with the players that Belichick has let walk, especially after last season. So much has been made of the McGinnis, Vinatieri, and Branch departures. Also because, notice how Givens isn't in there anymore? Also because the patch is stumbling somewhat, people start listening to idiots like Borges, who has been spouting about the demise of the Pats since Bledsoe was replaced. I can just imagine how big the grin on Borges' mug was after the Jets win. What a jerk.
So this is more about, well, they let some guys go that they could have
resigned. I think that has a lot to do with it, Tom. I think people still, you know.
And Deion Branch was the big one. Like, I think they could have lived with some of the other, you know, McGinnis is older. Givens won, had a lot of money.
Right. Givens never plays.
Well, he's out for the year.
I know.
Well, that's not his fault, really.
But he always gets hurt.
All right.
And guys that will always get hurt, always get hurt. Eric from Manchester, New Hampshire. Oh, this is interesting. I didn't bring this up. Where was John Rook yesterday?
Where was he?
Yeah.
Here.
Do we have access to his emails? Because Doug Flutie received some threatening emails yesterday blaming him for the Texas loss last week. That they said that his pregame analysis was the cause for Texas losing. Anyway, this person brings in this story. This is out of the Boston Herald. An unhinged Texas Longhorn fan who blames Doug Flutie's televised analysis for the team's upset Saturday threatened the former football star and his family in an electronic mail message, police said. We no longer call them email now, the electronic mail messages. The threat, which was not detailed by police, was sent to Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism early Sunday, Police Lieutenant Paul Shastany said. Quote, we have the intentions of finding this person and speaking to this person, said Shastany. As threats go, it's a pretty serious incident. Although the exact nature of the threat was not disclosed, the man, who investigators believe lives in California, wrote, you jinxed the Longhorn faithful and a chance at the national title. So, police spoke with Flutie. He's aware of the threat, Shastany said, but there was no imminent danger, and Flutie went ahead with a foundation fundraiser last night at the Hyatt Regency in Boston. So, we'll have to ask John Rook about that. Does John know about that, Gary?
I do not believe so.
I think Rook had something to do with it.
I agree.
You know? You can make emails seem like they're coming from California.
Yeah, he's not playing with a full deck. I think it's him.
Todd writes in from Jacksonville, Florida. Boy, he's got a long one. This is a long one. I'll try to see if I can pick out anything. He says that I'll read the first paragraph. Anyways, there has been a lot of talk lately in the media and by fans that these Patriots don't seem to have any fire in them, that maybe three Super Bowls have made them fat and lazy. I don't agree with this and think that we are seeing is a general frustration by the players and a lack of excitement.
Lack of excitement is no fire.
Right.
It's the same thing.
He talks about the lack of big plays on either side of the ball and shows that there is no excitement, and it shows in the field. Well, that's
the lack of fire.
Yeah.
What do you think? You think we mean that they're actually, like, starting fires somewhere?
Okay, I'll get to his last paragraph. He says, this team just isn't as opportunistic and are more mistake-prone than the past Super Bowl-winning teams, and that's what I believe we are seeing. Maybe what we saw leaving via free agency weren't just players but playmakers. As individuals on other teams, we may not see their impact, but as a whole on the Pats, we saw them as playmakers. Vinatieri hitting a clutch kick, Branch catching Brady's bombs, Willie Mack making a key stop or sack, Loss shutting down one side of the field and making QBs pay when they throw his way, Givens catching a key TD or making a key block downfield. Fire doesn't start on its own, and it certainly can't sustain itself without some type of fuel, and right now this team has no fuel to feed the fire. Well, I mean, all those guys that you just mentioned have in the past made big plays.
Yep.
You know? So who's going to make those plays now is the question.
Someone's got to step up.
You know? Mike Vrabel's made big plays, too. He's still here.
Yep.
Teddy Bruschi's still here.
Yep, Teddy Bruschi.
He's made big plays. Seymour's made big plays. He's still here. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know, Tom. It's... You know, I actually sit in my office, and I have these arguments with myself. I go back and forth like a schizophrenic, you know. Well, you know, it's not just that. It's this. Well, maybe that. You know, well, they only lost by seven. Yeah, but they lost by seven. You can't. You know, that's what happens with me. I go back and forth.
For those of you that didn't see the TV show, we should give you the quote of the year from Fred Kirsch, who said, well, at least they weren't blown out against the Jets. So Fred Kirsch now hanging his hat on, well, we played the Jets close at home.
Hey, Fred, did you notice your chair was down in that show?
Was it?
Yeah, you look like a midget. It was funny. Or, I'm sorry, a dwarf. Oh. Or a little, whatever you call those people.
The host.
And that was next to the host.
The host must have done it on me.
No, you couldn't tell. I didn't notice it when I was sitting next to you, but when we were watching it on TV, your chair was lower than the rest of ours.
That freaking show. We got to get a real set for that.
I thought we were moving over to the other set.
I never emailed them about it. Yeah, I don't like that little table. I feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's we got like our hands folded. I don't know what to do, where to look.
There's too much of my body exposed. That's not good. That's not good, even with clothes on. That's not good. Let's see. Bill is from Malden, Mass. He says, after getting raised, R-A-Z-E-D, by my friends who are Jets fans the last few days, one comment that one of them said registered a little louder than the others. One told me that the Patriots' talent level has dropped considerably in the last 3 years, and other teams are simply catching up. Let's take a closer look at the team. Okay, now here we go. On defense, the defensive line is young and talented, so that one is okay. The linebackers are above average, but aging quickly, and their performance is dropping. Frankly, within the next 2 years, I think we'll see at least three or maybe all four replaced due to age, cap hits, and general decline play. The secondary is young, but Harrison may have played his last game as a Pat. If not, next year is his last. And Chad Scott might leave as well. Eugene Wilson has disappeared since a good rookie year. The corners are young, but only Samuel is above average, and he is probably leaving. Other than the D-line, where is the talent in the defense this year? On offense, Mr. Tom is a superstar in his prime, and Maroney is a promising young running back. Other than that, I don't see much talent. Especially young talent. Mankins, Copen, and Neal are decent, but don't look right now like we can count on them. The wide receivers look crappy at best. The Pats' free agent exodus has been well documented, but the last drafts just have not produced enough talent to make up for the losses. Maybe nobody wants to face reality, but the Pats' days of dominance are dwindling. I honestly feel that major upgrades will need to be accomplished this offseason if the playoffs are a realistic goal. Any thoughts?
So he's got them out, Fred. Oh, he said they're down and out.
Yeah, except for the defensive line. This team stinks. Well, I don't know. I think Maroney's a pretty good player. I think your quarterback's pretty good.
You forgot to mention Ben Watson.
Yeah, John Rooks here.
Yeah, crazy man Rooks here.
When he gets to a microphone, I want to know his whereabouts yesterday.
We hear you're sending emails to Doug Flutie now? Is that what's going on?
I know that was you, John.
All right, wait a second. Now, who did what to Doug Flutie?
Doug Flutie received a life-threatening email yesterday blaming him because of his pregame analysis really, for the Texas Longhorn loss.
Everyone said, oh, there's a woman behind
I'm
every
serious.
Man, all that stuff. It's, I'd be lost without
her. I defended
every,
you by saying that I don't think you're playing with a full deck, and I fully expect that it was you.
Actually, I thought Doug's comments on Texas were pretty much right on.
Every step of the way.
Well, somebody blamed him for the loss, and they actually said the police are actually looking at it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. He did say, I don't know if you caught the pregame when he was on the desk there with Craig James, he did say that, you know, Texas will have no problem winning this game unless, of course, Colt McCoy gets hurt. Great play
by
Cody. That's what he said. So maybe he jinxed him.
They're blaming him for jinxing him.
Maybe they're blaming him for jinxing him, but he did say that. But, I mean, it's kind of like, and then at halftime, you should have seen the look on his and Craig's James's face. They were kind of like, I can't believe you just did that to him. You know, so that might be what they're referring to.
Okay, well, that could be. But all I know is that they pinpointed the emailer someplace in California. But I know with today's technology, there's a way to make it look like. So I still think that you're on the suspect list. Yeah.
Okay. guilty, Fred. Guilty.
You know, we've got I'd say 30% of our fans saying that we shouldn't give up on this team, and all the fans that are just not paying attention and they're not true fans, and then about 70% are really, really worried. Where do you fall?
I'm gonna say that I'm probably somewhere in between. Honestly.
Okay.
I mean, yesterday I did say on the show that I thought what Sunday's game signified was the beginning of the downward slide. I did make that statement yesterday.
Then you're in the 70.
So, well, maybe they're listening. Who knows? I mean, here's the thing.
Or they're watching.
Well, it could be. People do, you know, I don't think our fans are stupid fans. I think they're pretty intelligent because they follow the team with a passion. So I think they probably have a tendency sometimes to overanalyze, but I don't think they ever underanalyze this football team. And I think it's one of the things that I appreciate, you know, in going back and forth with most of our fans who, you know, take the time to email us, that I think that they're all pretty doggone knowledgeable. That having been said, my thoughts yesterday were that I thought
should have been here for the first hour.
Really that good, huh? Anyway, the I got a sense that there didn't seem to be that sense of urgency, that sense of creativity, that sense of something.
I'm with you.
Know,
you don't
that
see-
was there on Sunday that we had seen in the past. This is the first time Sunday's game was the first time in recent memory, Fred, that we lost to a team we should have beaten.
No, and I think that this was the bottoming out the Jets game, and I think you're gonna.
Well, now, I did say that yesterday, too. I did say, look, it doesn't mean that this team won't come back this year and that they won't inevitably compete for the AFC title and get back to the Super Bowl. I'm saying that what this does is it should underscore now the fact of what you've had as a fan of the Patriots and what we've had is covering this team for the last few years, what we've had in terms of quite a football experience and trying to appreciate it a little bit more when you look at it from that perspective. And number two, that from here on out, you know, people continue to emulate the Patriots. They try to be like the Patriots. They try to pick off the Patriots. They want to be the Patriots.
Right.
And so it's going to be that much more difficult from here on out to take it to that next level. I mean, after a while, your battery runs down. Your gas tank runs short of fuel. You have to come up with some fresh, creative, new ideas. Sometimes that means getting new coaches in, which, of course, we've had over the last couple of years. And it also means training the ones that you have to do things the way that you've learned how to do it in order to be successful. And this is all sort of a rebuilding process. They're doing things here in uncharted territory. That's what they're doing. Nobody has ever had to rebuild on the fly from a quote-unquote dynastic type of team in this salary cap era. Nobody's ever done it.
Right.
And I had a very good email in yesterday's program that pretty much suggested the very same thing, and I happen to agree with it 110%. I thought he hit the nail on the head when he said, you know, nobody's ever had to do this before. I, for one, as a fan, and this is the emailer I'm paraphrasing here, I, for one, as a fan, am willing to give them the benefit of the doubt because we've never been this road before.
Right.
And I said, you know what, you're absolutely right.
Right.
So,
as far as this team goes, now Fred may be right. Maybe they don't lose another game for the rest of the season. But as far as nine games in, do you ever watch a team and just say they don't have it? I always say I don't know what it is. Tom Brady has it, but like you watch the Chargers, they have a bad secondary. You could pick parts of it, but they kind of have it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I watch this Patriots team, and whether it's the emotion, the fire, the desire, I just feel like I'm watching a team that doesn't have it.
I think you're right, Tom. I was sad to think that after the game on Sunday, but I said this team doesn't have it, as it had it three of the last 4 years. I don't think it does. Now, can it change? It might. It might.
Don't worry. Belichick will show them some boxing match or some horse race. They'll
get
all motivated.
Well, I hope that
don't tell Paul that.
I hope they don't show On Golden Pond since they brought Vinny Testaverde in.
Well, yeah.
You know, because that happened after we left the air
grumpy
yesterday.
Grumpy old men.
Yeah, grumpy old men. That's another good one, you know. And after when I got home, actually, from Foxborough yesterday, and I had to do a college basketball game last night, and someone pulled me over at the basketball game before I went on there and said, did you hear about the Patriots?
Oh.
No, it wasn't a policeman. Thank you. Really. What's your email address anyway? Yeah. And and I said, no, I didn't hear any. He goes, they signed Vinny Testaverde. I just kind of chuckled, and I said, well, one of two things here. You know, I mean, certainly they've needed another quarterback on the roster. I said, you know, either somebody needs a binky or Tom's really hurt.
Yeah.
Which is it?
Well, I think it's a combination
Fred's
of...
Fred's got some crazy theory if you want to hear it.
No, I think...
Do you have a theory?
No, Fred.
I think they've obviously been thinking about that third quarterback all season.
Right,
because
they
talked to him and other quarterbacks.
We knew that. He was in here for a tryout.
Right.
Yes.
You saw the beating that Brady took. I think they finally said... We better do this before it's too late. Second of all, I think that, and Tom, that's what Tom said, and a lot of other people say, I agree with that completely. I think that's one thing that pushed it over the top was the beating that Brady took
last week on Sunday. On Sunday, yeah.
I think the second thing is, I think that Belichick right now is overtaxed. Mm-hmm. I think that he's got one of the smallest coaching staffs in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you got a young offensive coordinator who
who needs involvement from the head coach, boy, who also is supposedly the quarterback coach. I think bringing in a veteran like that can only help there as far as an extra experienced guy on the practice field, not just for Brady, but for Belichick.
I agree.
Belichick needs guys that he can talk to, too, because I think that he has a lot going on right now, and I think he needs people in there that he knows and knows him, and he can try. So I think all those things added up and said, now's the, let's just do it. Let's do it.
I think it's 100% accurate. I do believe that it's a combination of both, you know, Brady and Belichick needing a binky, and number two, making sure that you've got an insurance policy in place in case, the unforeseeable happens.
You know, but if it is that Brady is hurt and can't play, it's not going to be Testaverde playing anyway.
It's going to be Castle. Yeah.
So, all right, well, that's going to do it. Tom and I have to go back up and work on PFW. John Rook's with you until 4, and, of course, you can hear that Field Turf press conference as well during this segment. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.